passion makes the whole thing work. I mean, it sounds so thin, but it's so true. If you are working for an organization, or you yourself are representing some sort of idea or solution or concept that is making people's lives easier, that's changing how people work, that's exciting stuff. Even if it's small, even if it's this little thing that you're doing and you're not saving the world, but you're changing one person's life or one role's life. Like, that's so cool to me. If you are doing the job of SEO and marketing right, that passion is the fuel that's just driving the whole thing forward. What we've heard from search engines and what continues to be the case, despite the AI stuff that's rolling out all the time, is that humanity matters.
The smartest marketers from all walks of life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens. And tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Well, Marketing Smarts listeners, are you ready to unleash the power? I know I am, and I'm super excited about this episode today because we're talking about unleashing the power of pillar-based marketing. That's right, pillar pages, content clusters, educational articles, and a little thing called sub-pillars. Well, we'll get into that later. Again, we're going to talk with Ryan Brock, who is the expert on pillar-based marketing. We're going to talk about what keeps Ryan up at night. We're going to talk about the hurdles, success, how to get started. He's going to break it down. And of course, towards the end, we're going to get some words of wisdom. I have to be honest, I was nerding out the entire time as I was speaking with Ryan Brock for this interview. Ryan Brock is a brilliant storyteller who founded and ran the Demand Jump acquired content agency, Metonym Media, with 12 years experience driving measurable content outcomes for businesses in every industry. Ryan is a seasoned SEO expert. Now, as Chief Solution Officer at Demand Jump, Ryan works with companies worldwide to remove the guesswork from SEO and drive industry-leading organic traffic results through pillar-based marketing methodologies. Ryan is the co-author of Pillar-Based Marketing, a data-driven methodology for SEO and content that actually works. Whew! With that, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear a word from our sponsor, and then you know what time it is. Are you looking for great curated content specific to you, the B2B marketer? Want to have fun while also learning valuable information to help you succeed on a daily basis? Then you're in luck. Look no further. This week's Marketing Smarts podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Smarts Live Show. That's right, you can join us live every Monday where we shine the spotlight on you, the community members, share fresh B2B news, several top-notch curated articles to help you be a better marketer, and of course, have tons of fun along the way. If you want even more B2B marketing education with the ability to ask questions and engage with the rest of the audience, tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the Marketing Smarts Live Show. You won't regret the additional B2B learning you'll be adding to your life. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast. That's right, with that out of the way, it is time to get into the good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to unleash the power. Get ready to learn about pillar-based marketing. Let's go ahead and get into the good stuff. Marketing Smarts listeners, it's your boy George B. Thomas back, and I'm super excited because I really feel like I'm going to get the fill of nerdiness that I need on most of these episodes. I am talking with Ryan Brock today, and the reason that I'm so excited is because we're talking about unleashing the power of pillar-based marketing, and man, again, I can't wait to see what nuggets of wisdom we can uncover for you, the Marketing Smarts listeners. Ryan, how the heck are you doing today?
I am doing lovely, George. Thank you. Especially with such a, I'm going to take it as a compliment, introduction there about nerdy stuff and getting into it. I love this story. I love talking about pillar-based marketing. I really, really do. So when I talk to people who I think aren't blowing smoke and are like, yeah, I want to talk about this, my little brain just like starts firing off. So I'm pumped.
Well, just so everybody knows, the level in which I am willing to go today, I am a content nerd. I subscribe to the idea of pillar pages, content clusters, subtopics, blog articles. But you said something in a webinar, a marketing profs webinar that I was part of, and it was something around like sub pillars. I'm just going to kind of lightly allude to like these other elements that you started to mention, which then I purchased your book and had it shipped to my house almost immediately. Now, let's get back into the actual episode here after that context of why we're talking to Ryan and the importance of this conversation for all the Marketing Smarts listeners. Ryan, I always like to start and end with a couple little fun questions. Again, I've realized that this gets us to a good, fun place. Sometimes it's a dream. Sometimes it's a nightmare. But what keeps you up at night, Ryan, around SEO and content marketing and maybe this idea of pillar-based marketing when you think about it? What keeps you up at night?
I get the sense that you've at least opened my book and looked at what the first chapter is called. I'll tell you what keeps me up at night and what has for a long time, and it's just guesswork. It's just not having data where we think we have data. And that's a pretty broad statement, but I feel like in all of business, maybe in all of business, certainly in all of marketing, but in all of business, there isn't like a field, a tactic, a strategy like SEO that just is full of like Excel spreadsheets and BI graphs and charts and numbers and metrics that all don't actually tell you anything. There is so much information involved with doing the work of search engine optimization. And yet, a lot of the information you're looking at ends up being noise or vanity or something in between. And so for me, what I've spent my whole, I owned an agency, a content agency specifically for over a decade before I came over onto the dark side of marketing technology. And 9 times out of 10, my instincts were pretty good when it came to like, how do we develop content that people are going to want to read? How do we drive traffic to a new client's website? But even if I was pretty good, we're talking about a 6 to 12 month lead time for any value. And there's just so much waste along the way. That drives me nuts. And what I think continues to keep me up at night now, even though I feel like I found a better way, is that people still cling on to the notion that like that kind of waste is necessary and acceptable. And so it's a really uphill battle to convince people that they can let go of the trauma they've all experienced when it comes to SEO.
Marketing Smarts listeners, I have to ask, are you stuck in a world of just the wrong data or data you don't understand? Are you stuck in a world where you're wasting time or accepting something that you shouldn't be accepting? Well, buckle up because we're about to head down a journey that's going to hopefully help with all of those things as we move forward. Now, Ryan, one of the things I like to do is level set. Because while you might be a pillar-based marketing nerd and I might be a content SEO pillar-based nerd, not everybody listening to these episodes are like, yeah, let's rock with the pillars or know what we're talking about. So when we say pillar-based marketing, what the heck do we even mean? In other words, how do you define marketing that would be pillar-based for the listeners who are listening today?
Great question. I'm going to answer it from two perspectives. The first perspective is a literal response to the question that I've been asked. A pillar is a topic. It is a concept. It is a subject matter in which you might be an authority, an expert, or a moron. It is sort of a sandbox of ideas in which people look for information. The concept of like the pillar page or the pillar strategy for content has been around for a while. However, what are the metrics we're looking at to measure search behavior and understand what we should be writing about, what we should be putting out there from a creative standpoint? It's so different than what we've been doing with SEO for a long, long time that it's worthy of its own label, this concept of pillar-based marketing, the notion that actually if you start with an idea, and that idea is like a category that you're serving, it's an industry that you're in, it's whatever the name of your service or product is, it's the solution you're providing, that pillar concept. If you start there and you actually understand what people are talking about around that topic, not just on like on a micro level, like you're engaging with your customers, you're putting out good polls, you're speaking to salespeople to understand what it is your customers are talking about. That's something that's been done for a long time and it's something that doesn't work. And it's the same around social media listening and all this stuff. There are a lot of ways that you can begin to understand what people care about around a topic. But I believe, and I think I've proven out over a considerable amount of time in a lot of case studies, that if you want to understand what people are talking about, what they actually care about around a subject, around a pillar, if you will, the best source of data for that is the way Google contextualizes related searches and related question behavior in search engines. If you start with any phrase, you can begin sort of working your way through the branching ways Google knows that people learn about a topic. There comes a point, eventually, where if you're using the right kind of machine learning algorithms and data, where you analyze that recommendation engine, you suddenly have like an objective map of what is this topic. What is the subject in terms of search behavior, in terms of the questions that matter, the keywords that matter? It's not about metrics like search volume. You're not working from a perspective of here's a list of keywords that somebody has in a database that I'm paying to access, and I'm going to measure them according to, do they look like words that I want to target? Do they have high monthly search volume? Do they have a low competition score so I feel like I can write this content and actually drive traffic to my website? We're saying forget all of that. Only care about how likely it is any given term related to a topic, a pillar, is to show up across otherwise completely unrelated journeys. In other words, if people start in two very different places with different phrases, learning about little facets of a pillar topic that your business cares about, what are the terms that, like, time and again, people are going to keep asking, even if they're learning about otherwise kind of different things, right? Like, these terms just keep coming back. It's a different kind of metric that allows us to say, we can kind of gate it. We can kind of say, this is the structure of a pillar topic in terms of how people learn about it online. And then this is sort of the spider web. I talk about spider webs a lot, but this is the way people move around the structure of that network. And so this is the content you need to develop. But it just starts there. I mean, pillar-based marketing has a lot of potential beyond just organic content, because effectively what we're doing is we're starting to think statistically and in a very high level about, like, how entire populations learn about subjects. And if you're talking about investing any marketing dollars in something creative, content-driven, educational, that's the level where I think you're able to actually start learning insights that point you in the right direction in terms of what to write about. That's the very long-winded actual answer to your question. I have a second one, but I'm going to stop talking for a moment because I've been on your side of the fence too, and I don't like guests that ramble.
No, I don't think that was rambling. Marketing Smarts listeners is probably the first rewind point. There was so much in there that you should map out and pay attention to, and we're going to keep diving down. But Ryan, what's the second answer to my question?
The second answer is, what makes marketing pillar-based is that marketers came up with a label. It's the most obvious marketer-driven label for a new category, period. Like, we realized when we started doing this, our time to value was different than traditional SEO. Our metrics were different than traditional SEO. So we're looking at it from a different perspective. The best practices, like how you use search behavior data, how you use keywords, how you plan your content, how you optimize it for SEO, all of that is so different that it's not SEO. It's not just another step in SEO. It's a different way of thinking about the concept of topical authority, basically. So we were like, we got to come up with a label for this. And the pillar becomes such a distinctive part of the strategy and the methodology. What we did was we just looked at what happened with account-based marketing. How did they get that to become a category? Creating a category is like the stupidest, hardest thing to do in marketing. So if we want to say this is at least a new subcategory of digital marketing, we just sort of like followed the lead of account-based marketing and said, let's call it pillar-based marketing. And then when I first began building content around pillar-based marketing, I crawled account-based marketing search behavior to see how have people historically learned about this as a new approach to marketing and sales, and then just sort of started taking cues from that in order to build this up to what it is today. And it worked pretty well, obviously.
Yeah, I love it. So it's interesting. I want to break this down a little bit more so people start to understand. Again, some folks may have heard some of this. By the way, they may have heard of pillar-based as skyscraper or different, like there's different names for this, but it's really honing into this pillar-based idea. And again, Ryan, I love that we're talking about topics, a topic that you want to be known for, a content strategy, and we'll get down into that here in a hot minute when we probably go a little bit off the beaten path and what that actually equals as moving forward. But when you think of the key elements, and this is, by the way, one of the reasons why we're here is because for me, key elements was articles, which created a content cluster, which would be attached to the pillar. But when we were on the webinar, the Marketing Profs webinar, there were other things that you were talking about. You had maybe made like a 2.0 version of even what I had been hearing about. So maybe just talk about some of the key elements of pillar-based marketing that B2B marketers should be paying attention to as they would move forward with the strategy for their organization.
If you've been into content clusters, topic clusters, pillar strategy for content in the past, dear listeners, it's a fairly simple concept to understand. You have a pillar page, a pillar article, or like the hub. It's the hub in the middle of the spokes. That is like, this is your big page about a subject. And like, it's usually going to be your short tail, you know, your short tail keyword that you think categorizes all of your activity pretty well. So if you're Nike, you might have a pillar page on running shoes. You surround that with articles that sort of answer questions, get into further detail around running shoes. And so like, you have that one hub and then you have spokes, and it almost can look like a wheel coming off of it. Most pillar strategies that you read about out there, that's the extent of it. Sean Schweigman, co-founder of Demand Jump and Toph Day, they knew to start there because the concept of Google's recommendation engine, it lends itself to like this 2D visual of a network. Hub and spokes models, and while traditional pillar strategy models have a little bit of that going, they're also very like flat. They're two-dimensional. It's like you have the hub and then you have some spokes. What we try to do is we try to take our cues from the ways that certain terms serve as nodules in a network for other recommendations. So I'm trying to think of a way to like really root this, but let's say you were searching for running shoes, and one of the recommendations Google gives you is, what are the best running shoes? And that's a dumb question to ask because that's a very subjective question, but let's just pretend for a second that that's that. And then let's say that we search, what are the best running shoes? And then we find some questions that people also ask. Maybe one of those questions is, how do I tell what the best running shoes are for me? So you search that and you go looking for data and you're looking for information. You don't find everything you need. So then you go back to the recommendations and all of a sudden, what are the best running shoes shows up again. What we're talking about is a non-linear kind of funnel. Like, funnel doesn't matter anymore. In this world, we think about the spider web, not the funnel. Because in a spider web, each of these terms in the network can appear sort of like in a physical point in space. As you go around learning, one term that you might go through and search on could lead you back to this term again. Other terms that are far off on the other side of the network, the other side of the spider web, could find their way eventually looping you back around to that same term. Because we know, and Gartner's done a lot of good stuff on this, we can talk about it, we can put some show notes if you want. I got some good stuff to share here, especially when it comes to the B2B buying journey. But like, people don't buy linearly. So like, when we build keyword lists and then we build like our CTA funnels with content, a lot of times we are assuming that people are going to have the same questions in the same order, and that the people who come into our website because they asked one question really care about this broader topic that we care about. But because we know that there are those like sort of intermediary terms where you get there, you go away, you come back again, that happens a lot. What that ends up looking like is a three-level pillar strategy versus that hub and spokes model where you have a pillar page and some associated content. You actually think about this as a more of a pyramid. Maybe you should call this pyramid-based marketing because it looks like a pyramid. You start with your pillar page at the top. That's a core element. It's the hub of your network. If we think about it hierarchically, it's like a pyramid where you have a pillar page at the top. Then you have what we call three sub-pillar pages in the middle. And this is the start of a plan. And then you have 12 supporting blog posts on the bottom. You could also think about this from that spider web network model where sort of in the center is your pillar topic. That's your pillar page. If it's running shoes, it's going to be about a 3,000 word piece of content. It's going to be your broadest and your longest, but still your shallowest piece of content on your website about running shoes. One level out or one level down, depending on the perspective that you're looking at this from, you have what we call sub-pillar pages. This is where you remain sort of really high level and broad but shallow, but a little bit less broad, a little bit less shallow. You're talking about like a 2,000 word piece of content. And if running shoes is the pillar page, a sub pillar page might be cheap running shoes, breathable running shoes, green running shoes. Those might be sub pillars, and they earn that status in your strategy because they're load bearing, they're architectural. They are those sort of hub terms that as people learn and ask different questions about running shoes, they keep coming back to them. Like, those terms just keep showing up again and again and again. So we want to zero in on that part of the network and see what people are talking about. We want to build our article around that. And then finally, you have supporting blog posts. And those supporting blog posts are where we really zero in on the people also ask section of Google search results. And those are still showing up even if you're getting like the generative AI experience. It's just coming up as like follow-up questions, but then you'll also see it down below as well. So the idea there is these are your really long tail, really low competition terms that even in some search engine optimization tools, you might be seeing really low monthly search volumes. So it's like not even worth your time. However, because they come up in these people also ask recommendations with Google, we know that these are questions that are really, really important and that a lot of people ask them. And so you can sort of contextualize those as they branch off of your sub-pillar pages. So when it all comes together, you end up with this multi-tiered hierarchy of content where people can come in at any point and then have a choose-your-own-adventure style experience through your network of content, which, ooh, by the way, Google just so happens to mimic exactly how you've designed your recommendation engine around this topic. So if our job as organic content marketers is to establish topical authority, because domain authority doesn't matter anymore, and all that sort of like technical scammy stuff that used to be a big deal is really unimportant in the eyes of Google. If we're trying to show Google, hey, we are a topical authority, this structure for content not only provides a good user experience, not only talks about what people actually care about, but itself serves as a sort of representation of what Google's own recommendation engine looks like. So it's comfortable. It's familiar to Google. They know that statistically speaking, most people who come to this website are going to like it. Actually, I'll connect with what they're reading. So that's like the core of it. It's really, really data-driven in a way that I don't think any other SEO tactic has ever been.
Tactical sessions, inspirational keynotes, off-the-clock antics. And let's not forget about immeasurable connections. What am I talking about? The B2B Forum, of course. For more than 15 years, the B2B Forum has been the conference where today's leading B2B marketers gather for insights, networking, and laughs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's never too early to plan for success. Join us in 2023 in October for inspiration from B2B marketing experts. And I mean those marketers who walk the walk and know how to talk the talk in a way that you can understand. Get access to real-world actionable insights on the tactics and tools that work today and strategies that stand the test of time. When you say, well, on October 4th, you can join us for the B2B Forum full-day workshop for all access attendees. And on the 5th and 6th, well, spectacular conference shenanigans. That's right. If you head over to the B2B Forum website right now, you can sign up to join us October 4th through the 6th for some amazing education. And guess what? I'll see you next year at the B2B Forum. That's right. I'll be there. Will you? Yeah, I love this so much. And Marketing Smarts listeners, I hope you know that you just had a multi-minute masterclass in what you should be doing with your content strategy around these topics that you want to be known for. Also, you can't see this because you're listening to the podcast, but I am literally holding a book, Ryan Brock and Christopher Toph Day, Pillar-Based Marketing, a Data-Driven Methodology for SEO and Content That Actually Works. If you love that section that we just listened to and you want to dive in deeper, then this book might be right for you. Which, by the way, Ryan, I want you to take some time. Actually, talk to me about the book. Who is it for? Why do they need it? Wax poetic on just that additional resource that they could get their hands on.
Sure. First, George, I want to say that looked like that was a hardback. Was that a hardback?
It's a hardback, my brother. Yes, I got the hardback version.
We have sold a precious few of those, so respect. Why the book? Well, who's it for? This book is for any marketer who is like me. I mean, like, again, you can't see it. I'm wearing a hat, and you're not watching this. You're listening to it. But my joke that I like to give, this is very self-deprecating, is that when I started my agency back in 2011, I had a full head of hair. It was thick and blonde. It was beautiful. And now I have no hair. In fact, the state of Indiana decided when I got my driver's license updated here just a couple months ago, now that I don't have any blonde hair, my beard is red. So they just like marked me down as a redhead on my driver's license. I was like, I love that I don't have an opinion in this. Like what I think doesn't matter. Whatever you think is fine. But the point that I'm trying to make, despite all of this weirdness, is that I legitimately was so stressed about the calculus of going to a client, and maybe you're not in an agency, maybe you're working internally as a marketer and you've got still some client, you've got a stakeholder, a boss, somebody who's tracking what you're doing, and you got to say, it would be real nice, especially as advertising costs skyrocket, for us to be able to actually write content that people read, to know that like it's not on us to have to cram that content down people's throats by shoving it on Facebook constantly, by emailing it out constantly, but we could actually put it out there. It could address real problems, it could be measured as authoritative, and then it could drive organic traffic to our website. And it's just very, very difficult to work that calculus when you're trying to say to somebody, hey, give me a portion of the budget that I need to create not just good content, not just like content that's okay, But content that legitimately is better than whatever else is out there. That it's legitimately more aligned with the statistical average of what people are looking for around any given topic. And it's going to actually, like, solve problems for people. And then in doing so, drive meaningful traffic that's really good leads or sales or whatever it is we're looking for. It's just hard to look somebody in the eye and say, you have to give me money for, like, 3 to 6 months at minimum. And if we're lucky, I mean, the average is like 10% of that content will end up ranking high on Google, but it's easy to miss completely. And even if you do hit, you don't know for a long time and you don't know why. So we wrote this book because we felt that the results that we see from pillar-based marketing, I mean, I tell people this all the time. I'm going to use the really overblown hyperbolic brag case study here, but like know that it's small, it's medium, it's large, but no matter how much content you're producing or what you're targeting or how competitive it is, pillar-based marketing drives results overnight. I mean, it's right away. So the last time that I created a pillar strategy for Demand Jump for our own marketing purposes, it was around SaaS content, software as a service content. We'd never written anything on that. In fact, we'd written a ton of stuff on content and websites and SEO and all that. But if you look at the network of search terms surrounding SaaS content, we weren't on the board for anything, nothing. We had no content. We weren't even trying. So we wrote just 28 pieces of content, which is a lot. I know there's some marketers out there who are like, that's like half my year, guy. Like, that's a lot of content. But at the end of the day, here's the difference is by investing in writing 28 pieces of content over a month, 6 weeks, we basically were investing what we would have been investing in paid search during that same amount of time. But instead, we wrote content with it. We published that content. We put about $40 an article on that content, driving qualified traffic. That's another key element of pillar-based marketing. It's where we kind of bring together your paid strategy with your organic content strategy and say, these things can work together in harmony. And that works because we need to tell Google, hey, look at these people who are reading this content. They like what they see. Because statistically, we know that we're answering the questions that they actually have. Maybe not for everybody, but for the most part, what we're actually covering in an article is what people want to read. And by the way, another aside, when we talk about a pillar page of 3,000 words, that sounds insane to a lot of people. Like, are you kidding me? I'm not writing a 3,000 word article. No one's going to read it. Nobody likes it. George, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to quiz you. I'm going to put you in the hot seat.
Uh-oh.
Across all of the practitioners of pillar-based marketing that I'm tracking, so this isn't by any means a very scientific read, but across the ones that we're paying attention to, 3,000 words. What do you think the average time on page is across the board for those 3,000 word pillar articles?
If I had to guess the user, how long they're staying on the page?
Yeah.
Less than 5 minutes.
That's a really good guess because, I mean, honestly, in 2022, 52 seconds was the average time on page for any page on the website. We're getting about 15 minutes. Why is that? Because we're actually not just covering the topic that matters, but we're looking at that network for each headline, for each section, for every little bit of what we're covering. It's all data driven. Because of that, it just works really, really well. Now, we put a little bit of money into driving traffic there, traffic that looks similar to who would be landing there organically once it ranks. Those people read it. They love it. Google says, holy crap, this is amazing. And not only is this one page really good, but you've got a network, in this case, of 28 pages that are all linked together. And so, like, people are clicking all around, going for looking for more information, navigating the way that they want to. And it's a really great user experience. Guess what? You win. So what happens is, in this case, it was 28 pieces of content. We published it. Within 5 days, we had like 78 page one rankings, I want to say, driving actual traffic 5 days after publishing. This is organic traffic coming from page one rankings. Within 6 weeks, we had 497 page one rankings, 4 terms related to this pillar topic in that network. By now, it's like 700. And so by taking and deferring our what would have been paid budget into content, following this data-driven methodology that actually works, for about a month and a half, month and a half, we now have something that is responsible for roughly 20% of our website traffic over time, month over month, and we only had to write it once, and we only had to put it out there once, and now it's just delivering for us day in, day out, and that's in addition to the other pillars that we've done. For us, for our marketing team, it is like a different story. Like, we don't have to spend so much money on paid advertising to get a good foundation of traffic because our good foundation of traffic is coming every single day. Man, I wrote that book because I want people to know about that because it is a better way and it's so exciting when you see it work in action.
It's so good. And Marketing Smarts listeners, I hope you picked up on the words customer experience or just user experience. It's funny, Ryan, when I teach pillar pages, I actually say this line. It might be 5, 10, or 15,000 words, right? I want them to know that it is a deep piece of content. People lose their mind, but when we start to paint the picture of it's about the experience that people have going down the page, it's about the elements that are on the page, images, video, iconography, subheads, like all of that good stuff, people will stay on longer. So that 15 minutes is like, yes, that's, I want to hear that. Time flies when you're having fun, by the way. This should probably be a two-part episode that we might have to circle back around and get some more time together. I want to go off the beaten path for a second, because you said earlier, a couple questions ago, you alluded to the way that you plan your content drastically changes. When you think about this pillar-based marketing, right, you've got the main pillar, you've got the three sub-pillars, and you've got the 12 articles. First of all, is it only 12? Can there be more than 12? Should there be less than 12? How do you pick the right 12 if it is only 12? The question is, how does this pillar-based marketing idea change what folks might be doing from a content planning strategy standpoint?
I talked about a 16-piece pillar strategy that's become sort of like emblematic of the book and the methodology that I'm teaching that we're enabling in Demand Jump. The reason we talk about a 16-piece strategy is because we've tested it. In order to create that network effect where Google sees it, and it's like that two Spider-Men pointing at each other meme where Google's like, you see the same thing we do about how people want to learn about this. That's cool. You need 16 pieces networked together to create that effect. That's just the minimum. There are some pillars that we've done that are like 130 pieces of content over time. And a lot of customers that we work with who use pillar-based marketing, use our technology to make it happen, they're writing between, I'd say on average, 16 and like 35 pieces of content for a pillar. It just varies depending on like how big is the network. Sometimes you'll analyze the network and you'll get like 3,000 terms back, but a lot of that could be junk. A lot of that could be stuff that you don't care about, that you don't want to cover. A lot of it might be really, really good, but there's only like 200 terms in your network. So you really got to buckle down and do the whole thing. It just depends. And so one of the ways that this works, and I'm going to speak from like a slightly proprietary standpoint, because we have to address the question that you just asked in a, like a meaningful way regularly. What we've done at Demand Jump to facilitate this strategy is we've created something called a DJ score, which is effectively a score from 0 to 100, where we're measuring. I was talking before about those sub-pillars and how they're sort of connected across a lot of different journeys, and like a lot of different terms might lead you back to those sub-pillar terms that you're targeting. Well, what we do is we analyze each term that shows up in the network, and we give it a score, 0 to 100, and that represents how connected it is to other terms in the network. The higher the score, the more load-bearing it is when it comes to like the pathways people take learning about this. The lower the score, the less it matters. It's actually really easy for me when I'm doing the pillar-based marketing strategy work, so like look at my dashboard in Demand Jump, see, okay, this is a priority order of like the most connected to the least connected. And if I'm going to start with 16 pieces of content, boom, that's my sub-pillar. Here are the 3 or 4 terms that connect to it directly in the network that are the highest DJ score. And it kind of builds itself, honestly, at that point. And so you just keep going until you feel like you're driving the kind of traffic you want to. You're beating out your competitors in a way that seems like you're feeling good about it. You've covered all the terms that seem to make sense to you, but like there is a way of like analyzing search terms themselves and sort of quantifying whether or not they're worthwhile.
This episode has been so good so far. I want to try to squeeze in a couple more questions. First of all, we've laid a, and when I say we, I mean you, honestly, Ryan, have laid out so much stuff that any B2B marketer listening to this should just take and run with. When I think about them running with the things that we've talked about, I want to dive into what are the hurdles that you've seen get in the way, meaning the B2B marketers, when they're trying to do this, when they're moving forward to use pillar-based marketing in their organization, what are some of the hurdles they're going to come across that you want to tell them to watch out for?
Man, okay, there's at least 2, but it might be 3. So I'm going to start with the number 1. Yeah, there's at least 3. Number 1, the smarter your organization is with SEO, the harder it's going to be to accept this methodology. I found that when I work with like career SEOs who are in a position where they need to like provide value and prove value, what we ask people to do goes against a lot of what you've learned in SEO. Like, we don't care about keyword density. We don't care about cannibalization. Like, that's one thing that we hit all the time. When somebody sees the strategy that we'll put together around a topic, it'll be like clear that across a few of the blog posts, we're sort of covering the same information. Well, we're doing that because the data tells us we have to, and because it's good user experience to not assume that your readership has read every blog post on your website, because nobody does that. Oh, but you're going to cannibalize this term. They're close enough. We're more concerned about broadening the net and reinforcing the network. So that's just one example of many, and there are many things where we say, forget about it. Like, search volume does not matter. I don't think about estimated search volume at all. I don't think about competition. I don't think about domain authority. I don't build links. That's another thing we can probably do a whole episode around. We haven't built a single link, ever. We've never done any work to build links around this content that drives this kind of success. Unlearning what we've all accepted as, like, black and white, substantial, concrete facts of the SEO universe, that's number one. The more stressed somebody is about how BS SEO is, the more likely it is they're going to be able to, like, throw that stuff away. But the more, like, complex a person's reporting and, like, individual tactical approach to SEO is, the harder it's going to be to let go of it. Number two, in measuring the network of content, of search behavior around a topic, around a pillar topic, you start seeing questions come up that it's very clear are structurally important. Like, these are very connected questions. You have to answer them, but they seem maybe really elementary. Somebody who's sophisticated enough to be your customer isn't going to want to buy it. Well, that's not the point. The point is, in a broad enough pillar strategy, you are going to cover the topics where your customers are, as well as the ones where people who have potential to become your customers are. Google can look at your networked pillar strategy on your website and say, oh, this person made this only of terms that have, like, a high purchase intent, and it's clear that they're trying to sell something. Should I deem them a true authority on this topic? Or they can look at you and say, oh, you're answering the questions that you know statistically are important to answer. Yeah, you actually know what you're talking about. You are trying to be an authority. That's been a hurdle. And sometimes it's even, like, branded terms. I'll have people show up and look at the network, and I'll show them, here's what the network looks like for your pillar topic. They'll think the data's bad because it's got a bunch of branded terms for their competitors in it. And my response to that is, this is the real world, baby. I don't know, this world is not here to make you feel emotionally secure in your brand's visibility. If you're mad that your competition is getting a bunch of branded terms in this network, and those are ones we're deeming are the most important, you got to get out there and do something about that. You just avoid it, and there's enough other material to go after. But there's some times where you don't have to. Like, I've had startups, legitimate category creators that I'm working with, who are like, okay, there's one that I have in my mind. They built what is called, like, a prescriptive forecasting AI sales forecasting tool. Gartner had to literally come up with that term, and then they had to start using it because, like, they had automatically and very, very, not accidentally, but without having to try for very long, they created a category. I mean, they said, sales forecasting has always been trying to build a better crystal ball, but crystal balls don't exist, so instead, let's just build a smarter assistant to help you navigate your sales, right? We found when trying to write about sales forecasting for them to drive the traffic, first of all, nobody's going to use prescriptive forecasting because that's a new thing. They created that, so getting around that is hard for organizations who think, well, we want to talk about the way that we want to talk about stuff. The other side of this here is that if you know your audience is talking about Excel spreadsheets and using them for sales forecasting, even if you're an advanced AI SaaS startup, you can write about that. And you can even be straight up and say, we know that you want to know how to use, like, Excel to do a better sales forecast. We're going to tell you how to do that. But if you want to skip to the part where you're getting to the root of your problem and actually curing the disease rather than addressing the symptoms, click here and we're going to jump you down to where we talk about our solution, which is better. That works. And in fact, it's been three separate times now we've had startup small little businesses overtake Microsoft on Excel related terms because they're important and they're part of the network and you have to talk about them. That's number two. Number three is kind of related in that just, like, there's a lot of bias that comes in the SEO process. Like, all of these metrics that we look at have to do with, well, I feel like I'm going to go for that term, because they have the highest search volume. Well, why do you think that's a better thing? It seems obvious, but is there a reason why that's better than targeting this term that's more aligned with what your solution offers? Or you know that you're trying to sell a lot, so you're going to pick the terms that make the most sense. Or you're going to talk to your salespeople and ask them, what are the questions you're getting from customers the most often? And you're going to use that as you look through a keyword list, try to figure out what's right about. Maybe that salesperson doesn't know it, but they're falling victim to recency bias, and they're only surfacing the questions that they've heard most recently. Are those questions automatically representational of the entire market and how they think about things? No. Even in these little decisions that we make about content marketing, there's just so much room for bias. And what we're basically doing is saying, I don't care what you think is important. Like, I don't care about your domain expertise here for one moment. Just take a step back. look at the data, understand that that's the conversation people are having. So you have a choice. You can either stand in the corner and shout about your new thing using your language the way you want to talk about it, or you can join a conversation that's already happening and find a way to connect with a human being and provide value in that conversation rather than immediately trying to take it over yourself.
So much good stuff. Did you hear this? Broaden the net and reinforce the network. Man, pull that thread after this episode around the topic that we're talking about. Ryan, let's dive into, we got two more questions here. What does success look like? How do we know we have used pillar-based marketing to its full potential, meaning content, maximum ROI?
Basically, if you've done this right, within, I'd say, at most 2 weeks of publication of your content, you should start seeing page one rankings happen. And that's something that I haven't really touched on. I think I agree that we might want to come back and do a follow-up because I'm loving this conversation, but we don't care about scheduling. We don't care about calendaring. Like, we don't publish a blog post a week. We'd rather write 16 pieces of content that together are a network than publish them together as a network. And so when I talk about this time to value of, well, like 2, 3, 4 weeks, that's why I'm talking about it that way, because we drop the content as a network, not as individual pieces. That's super, super important because we want that network to be the thing that's being analyzed by Google and being explored by our readers. After all, it's a lot easier for a network of content around a topic to be considered authoritative versus a single page on a more focused subject to be authoritative. That's a lot harder to measure. But if all those pages are part of a network together, it works. All that is just a little background to say that you drop that initial pillar, you've done it all right, your website's looking good, you're indexing quickly, you're getting crawled, and then within a few weeks at most, you're starting to see page one rankings. Over time, there might be some volatility in your rankings data, especially because like the search experience just looks different from user to user right now. Google's going nuts, everyone's going crazy with all the changes and everything that's happening with AI. But you should start seeing it real fast. And so I've got like dozens of charts from PBM practitioners who are publishing content and then going from like fourth place compared to their competitors in terms of total rankings to first place in the span of just a couple of months. So, I mean, 3 months is, if you've published content, you've done everything the way that we teach you to do it, and in 3 months you haven't seen any results, something is very wrong, as opposed to the traditional SEO where that's the earliest you could expect to see results.
I love conversations that pull at the idea of, have we been doing it wrong the entire time? And this idea of like, yeah, I know, since the dawn of blog articles, it's been, you know, 2, 3 a week, 1 a week, like just dripping it over time. And this like, hey, you might want to rethink your publishing strategy is a really interesting conversation. And I love that it's based on what does success look like? Hey, it's going to be this faster time, these other items that you mentioned. We do have to have you come back, by the way. There's just, without a doubt, there's so many other sub conversations that we can have. But here's the thing. You've been on a journey with this pillar-based marketing. You've been having this battle around data-driven methodologies that people can use to actually impact their SEO and content in a way that it works for their business growth that they're trying to achieve. This journey, obviously, you've gained some wisdom along the way. So what are some words of wisdom you want to share with the Marketing Smarts listeners about pillar-based marketing, SEO, content, or since this entire time you've been doing your podcast episode with me in on what looks like a cruise ship, maybe just life itself, brother, what words of wisdom do you want to share with the Marketing Smarts audience?
Passion makes the whole thing work. I mean, it sounds so thin, but it's so true. If you are working for an organization, or you yourself are representing some sort of idea or solution or concept that is making people's lives easier, that's changing how people work, that's exciting stuff. Even if it's small, even if it's this little thing that you're doing and you're not saving the world, but you're changing one person's life or one role's life. Like, that's so cool to me. If you are doing the job of SEO and marketing right, that passion is the fuel that's just driving the whole thing forward. What we've heard from search engines and what continues to be the case, despite the AI stuff that's rolling out all the time, is that humanity matters. You know, it really does. And like, if you're trying to game the system, if you're trying to just drive traffic and you don't care how you get it, you don't deserve to be on the top of search engine rankings. You don't deserve to be considered an authority. But if you're really passionate about something and you're willing to not only listen to what other people are saying on a subject, Listen first to what people care about, and then you know what you need to tap into to really drive your story that you're passionate about home. I think pillar-based marketing is just the world's best representation of what that looks like in action in marketing. And obviously, yeah, like you said, I mean, I've got this galaxy projector up on my ceiling, bright pink hats and whatnot. My life is made up of stuff that I think is worth my time. And it could be something as stupid as buying a pink hat that goes really well with my blue branded Demand Jump t-shirt. It makes me happy, passionate about it, and so that is contagious if you embrace it. And I think that in marketing, those lessons are very valuable as well.
So, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you take lots of notes? I have to ask, what is your hashtag one thing, your number one execution opportunity after this podcast? Make sure you reach out and let us know in my inbox or on Twitter using the hashtag MPB2B. I also have to ask, are you a free member of the Marketing Profs community yet? If not, head over to mprofs.com/MP today. You won't regret the additional B2B marketing education you'll be adding to your life. Hey, listeners, we'd like it if you could leave us a rating or a review on your favorite podcast app, but we'd love it if you'd share this episode with a coworker or friend. Until we meet in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast, where we talk with Megan Bazeman about revolutionizing B2B brand monitoring with AI. Powered insights. I hope you do just a couple of things. One, reach out and let us know what conversation you'd like to listen in on next. Two, focus on getting 1% better at your craft each and every day. And finally, remember to be a happy, helpful, humble B2B marketing human. And we'll see you in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast.